Hi, I'm Steve Magnus, author, exercise physiologist, and performance coach to elite athletes. I'm going to share with you five insights from my newest book, Win the Inside Game, how to move from surviving to thriving and free yourself up to perform. Insight number one, we are all experts at self-sabotaging. I've worked with Olympians, medalists, professional athletes from every major sport, and rule number one is to help them get out of their own way. As humans, even the best of us are really bad at this. Think back to middle school or high school. Chances are you did this. You self-sabotaged. Maybe it was for that bigger exam or test. You didn't study as much as you should have. And then afterwards, you kind of brushed it off and said, if I would have studied, that B would have become an A. Maybe you were the cool kid in gym class who didn't try. Why didn't you try? Because you knew if you got out there, you might get beat at basketball or track by the nerd, and it might make you look bad. The essence of self-sabotage is protecting our sense of self. You still do this now. Maybe it's in your work life where you procrastinate on that speech that you're supposed to give. But we all self-sabotage. Why? Because trying and giving our all is really hard. It exposes us. We come face to face with if we're good enough. So instead, we protect. In the book, I call this living in survival mode. It's the state of heightened threat perception and self-preservation. It's when our motivation shifts from approach to avoidance. It's when we move from seeing things as a challenge to a threat. We go into the self-protective mechanism that prioritizes the immediate quick fix of getting rid of the anxiety instead of the long-term growth. It's not all our fault that we feel this overwhelming, threat or sensation of survival mode. In the book, I lay out the argument that it's because of three things. First, societally, we do a really poor job of fulfilling our basic psychological needs. When we don't feel significance, direction, or belonging in our life, our brain automatically defaults from security mode to threat mode. And in our modern world, we do a really poor job of giving people direction, making them feel significant, and making them feel genuine belonging. Second is we've overemphasized the external, looking at external validation and defining success narrowly through our accomplishments. Make it where we reach for candy instead of vegetables in terms of fulfilling our need for status and success. And then third, the information environment is making us feel like there are dangers and threat everywhere. The infotainment of everything signals that the world is dangerous. Look no further than your mom or your grandma who is convinced that everywhere around her is too dangerous to go walk. In order to fulfill our potential, we've got to get out of survival mode. We need clarity on ourselves, pursuits, and where we belong. Insight two, sustainable excellence is about balancing exploration and commitment. We're often told if we want to succeed, we have to go all in, to be obsessed, to burn the boats. But reality doesn't match with this advice. For the vast majority of us, that kind of approach will put us in that survival mode. It will elicit a fear response. Now, consider a couple studies here. First off, there was a study on over 5,000 entrepreneurs that found that those who kept their day job were more likely to succeed than those who went all in and quit their day job. When we look at scientists, there were studies that found that Nobel-winning scientists were more likely to have hobbies and outside interests than those a rung or two below. If we look at elite athletes, we often think that early and often they go all in and are obsessed and singularly focused. But the research paints a different picture. In most sports, those who make it to the top have a more diverse sampling. It's why Wayne Gretzky once said, "No one told me to do it," when talking about his playing days. And even the poster child for youth sport, Tiger Woods, said, "Don't force your kids into sports. I never was. It's the child's desire to play that matters, not the parents." We often see the commitment and forget the exploration. We think we have to go narrow and exploit our talents before going broad and getting breadth. But research, again, points the other direction. When a group of Northwestern University researchers looked at hot streaks, or really productive periods, among artists, directors, and scientists, they found a pattern. They tended to follow exploration followed by exploitation, meaning they went broad before they took that broad knowledge and narrowed it into a specific field or activity. And it was this pattern that mattered. The reason is simple. Exploration, or breadth, often is a kind of play. We don't understand or know what the boundaries are around us, so we're exploring them, we're testing, we're dabbling, we're following interests, and then able to pivot and go in another direction if we need to. When we're committed, when we're exploiting, what happens is we're taking our talents and narrowing, and we often get stuck. We get cemented to that narrow niche. We can see this in the one-hit wonder phenomenon, when an artist or author makes it big but then can't follow it up. When researchers looked at this, they found that authors who were given an award that showed that they were creative were more likely to suffer from this one-hit wonder phenomenon and not put out a successful second act. When they looked at why, it was because they were protecting their identities. When they got that award, the recognition shifted the author's identity. They weren't just a writer, they were a creative. Their story had changed. And that's what happens when we narrow too far. As we age, we get lots of commitment or narrowing and not so much exploration. The problem is that that play, that exploration, that's what stokes our intrinsic motivation. It's what allows us to light that fire that then sustains us to be able to use that knowledge into something applicable. So what we need is more play. We need recess for adults. We need to be like the scientists who had hobbies and interests and things they dabbled in outside of their main pursuit. Insight 3. Build your own home field advantage. We've all heard of the home field advantage in sport. Home teams play better. Why, it's a friendly audience, but that's not all of it. Some fascinating research takes us out of sport and into work and life that shows us that our environment plays a large role in inviting actions and behaviors. Consider the following. When our phone is on our desk, even if it is off, we are more distracted and less productive. Why? Because part of our brain is literally paying attention to that rectangular box and thinking, oh, I've got to focus on this in case it bings or beeps, because that means it's important. Our environment invites actions. Our objects in our environment can invite roles. Consider research that has found that when we have pictures of family on our desk at work, we're more likely to work harder and more ethically. Research shows that we commit less ethical violations when our family is staring back at us. Our objects are cheat codes for our brain. They tell us what role to play. We can see this all the time in sports when an athlete puts on a jersey and becomes that competitor. It's Aaron Judge who says he becomes 99, who is different from Aaron at home. It's Kobe Bryant becoming Black Mamba. It's away from sports, where research tells us that having a gun around literally makes us more aggressive and more likely to mistake things in our vision for aggressive items, like seeing a banana and thinking it is a weapon. Why? Because our brain uses objects as cheat codes. The things in our environment tell us who we should be in that place. Should we be athlete Steve or writer Steve? We can see the same thing when we look at research that shows us that our environment primes roles. For example, when researchers primed students and reminded them that they are athletes, they performed worse on a math test. Why? The athletic identity took over for their educational or student identity. The same thing happened when psychologists primed individuals or reminded them of their ethnicity. Then in a diverse group, when primed of ethnicity, they cooperated less. If those people were reminded that they attended the same college, cooperation increases. Our environment tells us who we should be. The space we occupy tells us whether we belong here, whether we are accepted, and if we can let our guard down. It's why researchers have found that simply letting someone decorate the office that they are in improves their negotiation skills by up to 60%. When we feel at home, we perform better. Insight 4, balance caring deeply and letting go. There's no doubt about it. You've got to care to perform well. You need to care a lot about the thing you're pursuing to get the most out of yourself. But ironically, with high performers, that caring deeply is often the thing that gets in the way. Take legendary skateboarder Tony Hawk. In the middle of his career, he'd reached the top, he was the best in the world, and then he just quit. He couldn't take it anymore. He was the machine, but the machine had broken him. And that lasted until his good friend and fellow skateboarder told him, risk not winning. What happened? Hawk came back with an unbridled enthusiasm for the sport again. He said when he returned to competing, he had a totally different approach to what I was doing. I started getting more creative. I could still make it fun and I could still do it for a living. He risked not winning. And after that, he nailed his legendary 900 trick. Why? Because sometimes when we care too deeply, we narrow ourselves. We become attached to the thing. We fuse with their pursuit so there's not much space between who we are and what we're doing. And when our pursuits become self-defining, our ego takes over. We start to see every performance as proving ourselves again and again. It becomes, I am a failure if we lost, not I failed at skateboarding or running or riding. I am a failure. And I don't have to tell you, that's exhausting. Most people, even really good athletes, can't handle that. So what we need is not to go the other direction and say, I don't care, is to learn how to let go just a touch, to rebalance the equation, to put just enough space between us and our pursuits so that we are free to perform out of wanting to instead of having to. It's the paradox of trying. Legendary sprint coach Tom Telez, who coached Carl Lewis, Leroy Burrell, and many other Olympic medalists, once told me that people have the wrong idea of trying and effort. They think it is loud when it is really soft. And that defines sprinting. We need to adopt that mindset. It shouldn't be go all in, attach ourselves to the pursuit. It's understanding the reality of trying, that just like when we're sprinting, we need to put all of the force into our ground, but be as relaxed as Usain Bolt is doing it. That's the trick of running 100 meters. That's the trick of life. How to care deeply, but not have it be all-consuming so it makes us miserable. Insight 5. Belong instead of fit in. Belonging is a superpower. It makes the daunting seem manageable. It literally changes the perception of the tasks and challenges we face. Consider a couple research studies. A University of Virginia study found that when they put people at the bottom of a steep hill by themselves versus when they were with a friend, when they had the friend nearby, they said the hill was 7 degrees shallower. Other researchers have run the same type of experiment in all sort of tasks, from judging how long a distance is to lifting heavy weights or boxes. When we have a friend nearby, the hill is shallower and the boxes weigh less. It changes our perception of the difficult. There's other research that has shown that when we put people into an fMRI machine, scan their brains, and then put something scary or painful, whether that's a hot, painful probe or a snake nearby, What happens is when they have a significant other in the room holding their hands, their fear and threat centers in their brain and pain centers go up less than when it's them themselves. The stronger the relationship, the stronger the effect. Why does this happen? Well, social baseline theory tells us that we outsource much of our emotional regulation. We do this as a way to minimize risk and conserve energy. We literally share the load. When we know we can share our load, our predictions of what we're capable of and what we can handle change. We're not off on the savannah alone wandering around. We have our group or tribe with us. We can take more risks and go further into the depths of fatigue. But there's a catch. It has to be genuine. In our modern society, what we've done is we've often traded genuine connection and belonging to the kind of superficial fitting in. We look at our friends on social media instead of the deep connections that we have. We get genuine belonging by expanding our sense of selves, by letting others in. It's why when the U.S. military studied what created bonding and connection among their outfits, they found it was the in-between time, the time when they were shooting the shit, when they were having the shared nothingness, where they had to get to know each other, that created genuine connection. It's no different than if you look at workplace culture. What often leads the way is water cooler talk. It's not idle chit chat, but instead it's a chance to see Joe the accountant as not just accountant, but as a father with two boys and a daughter who likes Game of Thrones, who enjoys playing pickleball. We see people for the complex people that they are instead of the superficial caricatures that we often paint them as. So when we look at handling different difficult tasks, we need more genuine belonging and connection, less superficial fitting in. So there you go. 5 insights of many more of my new book, Win the Inside Game, that is all about turning down survival mode, getting out of threat mode, and starting to see the world as a challenge that you can take on and fulfill your potential. It's moving from choking to coming through in the clutch. I hope you take a look at it. I hope you enjoy it.